Think back with me for a minute to your bedroom growing up. What kind of stuff did you have in it? Specifically, whose poster or posters did you have on your wall? Was it an actor, a musician, a sports star? Who was it? And how much did you know about this person? Were you a casual fan or a full-blown disciple in the model of the believers? You know, it's not at all uncommon for young people to have someone that they idolize. A lot of young aspiring basketball players today want to be the next Steph Curry. Baseball players look up to Aaron Judge, literally since he's like 6'7". Singers want to be the next Ariana Grande or Miranda Lambert or Taylor Swift. And when we look up to these kinds of people, we tend to learn everything we can about them. Young sports fans might be able to recite a whole book of statistics about their favorite players. Fans of the latest boy band could probably give you the whole biography of each of their members. I was a nerd who was into superheroes, and I could, okay, can, tell you whatever you want to know about a pretty healthy group of them. We can get to where we know everything about a person and even wrap our whole identity and be like them. I mean, consider just how many young boys and not a few young girls got their hair cut just like Justin Bieber for a few years there. We know them all without having ever actually met them. Indeed, if you were to meet such a person on the street and just go completely fanboy or fangirl on them, well, you know, might be polite at first. What they're going to say when the police arrive to pull you away from them because they were calling them when they were being nice to you is that they don't know you. Well, this week finds us getting back on track with their series, Hard Sayings. Last week, we took a brief hiatus to get a sneak peek at the big ideas the kids spent the past week unpacking at VBS. I had fun then. I hope you did. I certainly had fun this week with the kids. I even had fun getting a pie smashed in my face, although Lisa was a little more into that than I thought she might be. And it was comforting, though, to not have to face it alone, although there at the end I was starting to feel a little alone as all the youth helped to make a whipped cream mold of my whole head. You know, getting a pie smashed in my face, or you know, 11 pies smashed all over my head, but it was worth it to be a part of building a church for some fellow Baptists in Ghana. And let me tell you how incredible that these kids are, and also their parents and some other adults who I think just wanted to see people get pies in their faces. Now, the total cost for building the church was $960. I challenged the kids to bring in $400 of that. Good offering, good goal. By the end of the day, Thursday, they'd given just over $1,100. Almost triple what their goal was. That plus some more money that I know is given today means that we will have been part of building one whole church and contributing to a second one in places, in one of the places of the world where the gospel is just, it's advancing like crazy. Well, this kind of reaching out for God's kingdom is a way to demonstrate our knowledge of Jesus as a community. And this kind of demonstration is important, too, as we're going to see in the next hard saying from Jesus we'll talk about this morning. So far in this journey, we've looked at a few doozies, right? In our first conversation, we saw Jesus raise the bar on what following him means. It's not something we can get by doing with only half a heart. Instead, following Jesus takes everything. What this means, as we saw in the second week, is that following Jesus is hard. It's hard to follow Jesus well. You know that. It's hard to remain committed when the journey gets tough. And no one makes that clearer than Jesus, that if we stick with him long enough, eventually the journey is going to get tough. But as tough as the journey is, the rewards for faithfulness over the long haul are even better. Or to put it as we did then, faithfulness is hard, but the rewards are rich. Finally, in the week before our break, we looked a bit closer at the challenges associated with following Jesus. The fact is, many of them will come not because of anything we've done, but rather because of who it is we're following. Because he stands as a constant and glaring indictment to folks who are intent on pursuing a path other than God's, the world hates Jesus. It hates him, but his physical absence means it can't take this hatred out on him. So it goes for the next most convenient target, us. The world hates Jesus. It sees us. Well, if those first three parts of our conversation were focused a bit more on the external challenges associated with following Jesus, the one we're going to look at this morning is much more internal in nature. As far as I'm concerned, it's about the hardest thing that Jesus said, period. at the very least, it's the thing that should stop us in our tracks and make us think. And in fact, if this saying doesn't make you pause for at least a few minutes every time you read it to examine your life, you may not actually understand what Jesus is saying here. We're going to look this morning at something Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount. Now, Jesus was a teacher. He was a master teacher. A significant part of what he spent his time doing was traveling around and helping people both understand the law as God had intended for it to be understood, as well as to take the law and advance it forward to the next level. On one occasion, in particular near the beginning of Jesus' ministry, a huge crowd had gathered around to hear him teach. Matthew actually managed to record the whole spiel and included it in his reflections on his time with Jesus. The sermon begins in Matthew chapter 5, where Jesus starts out by reinterpreting several key passages in the Law of Moses. You see, over time, folks had begun to think incorrectly about God's standards and expectations, and Jesus wanted to fix that. Then in chapter 6, Jesus dug a bit deeper into our personal relationship with God, talking about issues like prayer and worry and trust. Chapter 7 of Matthew, then, was a little like the lightning round, but as Jesus was nearing the conclusion, he said several things that at first glance seem unrelated, but all together have a clear trajectory to them. Look at this with me, starting in Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. "So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Enter by the narrow gate. For the gate is wide, and the way is easy that leads to destruction, and those who enter by it are many. For the gate is narrow, and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few." Now, look at what Jesus does here. He starts by outlining the golden rule. Treat other people as you want to be treated. Now, versions of this saying have been around for a whole lot longer than Jesus. The difference is that all the other versions make it something either negative or at least the most passive. They all say something along the lines of, don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you. Jesus's version, though, is much more fitting with the character of the God who sent his son to die for us when we were still sinners, as the Apostle Paul wrote in Romans 5:8. But then Jesus seems to shift gears talking about gates and ways. He lays out a general standard, but then he starts putting some fences around it. The fact is, not everybody keeps the standard. In fact, if we're going to take Jesus' words at face value here, most don't. As we've already talked about, the path to the kingdom is not an easy one. Here, Jesus is reminding of this yet again. Next, though, he adds a warning. Check this out in verse 15 now. "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You will recognize them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? So every healthy tree bears good fruit, but the diseased tree bears bad fruit. A healthy tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a diseased tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, you will recognize them by their fruits." Now, there are probably a couple sermons in these words, maybe three or four. On the one hand, there is the real warning against folks who come into churches looking to cause trouble, but putting on a mask to hide it. It's a call for us to trust people, but verify that they really are who they say they are. Don't throw someone into a leadership or teaching position who hasn't been around long enough to assess their character well. I once read about a book a woman who was an unbeliever wrote about Christians. And in order to do some research, she took a whole year, moved to Lynchburg, Virginia, where Liberty University is, and started attending Jerry Falwell's church, Thomas Road Baptist. She joined the church, she was baptized, she joined a small group, she got involved in some service teams and things like that. She made herself a part of that community. But it was all ruse, so she could write about us. Now, she was shocked that many of her presuppositions about Christians were wrong, and she found herself really enjoying the community and loving the people, but her devotion was an act all the same. On the other hand, though, put yourself in the shoes of Jesus' audience. That may not actually be so hard here. When someone says something like this, we rather naturally think in terms of us versus them. They, whoever they happens to be, are the wolves in sheep's clothing. We are the true and faithful followers. When Jesus said this, there were some folks in his audience who were no doubt thinking to themselves, you know, he's right. We've got to be vigilant against folks who might try and corrupt us deceitfully. We've got to clarify who the true followers are and start weeding out the rest. They may have even been thinking something like, "Run on, Jesus! We've been doing all kinds of good things for you. We've got good fruit in our lives. You go right on after those folks who would just pretend to be sincere. But come on, this is Jesus. He really doesn't let anybody think like that for long before dropping a bomb on them. And this comes in verse 21, and it's also where we find the hard saying here. Brace yourselves and listen to this. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who's in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. Now, perhaps that doesn't chill you to the bone at first view like it does me, but take another look at it with me. In Romans chapter 10, verse 13, Paul writes this, everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. It's pretty powerful stuff. I mean, anyone who cries out to Jesus can receive the gift of salvation he offers. And from just someone being strictly New Testament ideal, Paul was quoting this from the prophet Joel. This idea was one that had a long history among the people of God. There's incredible hope in this saying. There's incredible hope that Jesus seems to contradict rather directly. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. So, I mean, which is it? Can anyone call the name of the Lord and be saved, or are there some who aren't going to make the cut? Well, yes. Clear as mud now. Here's what Jesus was getting at. The name Jesus is not a magic word. And wearing it as a banner while you do great religious deeds or even ordinary religious deeds doesn't make you a Jesus person. In fact, if anything, it can make you the very wolf in sheep's clothing Jesus warned about just before saying this. Being a follower of Jesus takes more than surface level words and deeds. It's a whole life commitment to the ways and will of God. It's a sacrificial rejection of our will in favor of his. And here's the really hard thing here. Whether or not someone falls into this category may very well be a surprise to them. And indeed, we can deceive ourselves into thinking we're right on track with Jesus because of all the good things we're supposedly doing in his name. When the reality is that we're just not. Friends, the thought that someone might get to the throne of judgment, point to a whole lifetime of religious devotion and activity, and have Jesus say, I never knew you, should stop us in our tracks to do some internal evaluation. You see, here's the thing. If you're doing a whole lot of stuff for Jesus, coming to church, serving in the community, talking about Jesus with your friends and family, you know, things like that, but not a lot of stuff with Jesus, reading the scriptures on a regular and consistent basis, fervent prayer, practicing the spiritual disciplines and the like, you need to ask some hard questions. They're uncomfortable questions. They're frankly terrifying questions. They're questions like these. When I do the things at church that I'm doing, who am I doing them for really? How much time do I spend doing for Jesus versus doing with Jesus? Have I given the same amount of time to knowing Jesus more as I have to doing church work? How often am I merely going through the motions when it comes to serving the Lord? When it comes to Jesus, am I a friend or fanboy? Now, those aren't easy questions to answer. Depending on what the real answers are, they may be incredibly uncomfortable questions to answer. But we've got to answer them. Jesus' words here are just too cutting for us to try and ignore them or leave them alone. Because here's the big idea. Serving Jesus isn't the same as knowing Jesus. We can serve him all day long. We can serve him when it's inconvenient. We can serve him in ways both big and small. But if we don't know him, then we can't really have a relationship with him. And if we don't have a relationship with him, doing things for him won't do us any good. It would be like hanging up a poster of our teen idol and claiming it's evidence that he's a close friend of ours now. Serving Jesus isn't the same as knowing Jesus. Okay, well, then how do we demonstrate that we know Jesus? Jesus gives the answer in the next thing he says, but let me give you the summary version first. We build our lives on his words. You see, while following Jesus certainly entails serving him, that's not nearly the whole of it. Following Jesus isn't merely some fashion accessory for our lives. It is a whole life commitment to who he is and what he said. the idea here is best wrapped up in the word disciple. Now, the word disciple at the most fundamental level just means a learner. A disciple is someone who learns from another person. But in the cultural context of Jesus' day, a disciple was more than just a learner. Disciples were said to be covered in the dust of their master's feet. The idea was that they were so committed to being just like their teacher in every single detail that they would walk right up behind him everywhere he went just to be sure he didn't miss anything. They'd follow him everywhere, even into the bathroom, just in case he, you know, did something special in there or said a certain prayer, which they could learn and practice to be even more like him. They would build their whole lives on his words. Serving Jesus isn't the same as knowing Jesus. And if we're going to know him so that our service actually means something, we've got to build our lives on his words. This is exactly what Jesus says next. Check this out. Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house. But it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell. And great was the fall of it. Come on, you built a sandcastle before. You know what Jesus is talking about here. If you build something on the sand with no foundation, then when a big enough storm comes, it's going to collapse. Structures that outlast the storms have strong, sturdy foundations. Folks, Jesus' words form the kind of strong foundation on which we need to build our lives. Serving Jesus isn't the same as knowing Jesus. Well, Jesus isn't physically here anymore. He won't be again until he returns to claim his kingdom. If we're going to know Jesus, then his words are going to be the ticket to the goal. So then how do we actually do that? What does it look like to build our lives on his words? Well, for starters, we read them. There's simply no substitute for reading the scriptures if you are a follower of Jesus. If you want to grow in your faith and grow in your reflection of God's character, there's no better place to start, to continue, and to concentrate the bulk of your efforts than this. Yet, as central and simple to access as this key resource for spiritual growth is, indeed, the Bible is simultaneously both the most widely available and least read book in the world, far too many professed followers of Jesus engage with the scriptures on only an occasional basis at best. Let's put some numbers with that. When asked how often they read the Bible, 13% of the general population of Americans said daily. Want to guess what that number becomes when the sample pool was restricted to professed believers? You'd think it was pretty high, but let me put it this way. Look around and find four people seated nearest you. Only one of the five of you reads the Bible daily. Listen, serving Jesus is not the same as knowing Jesus. If you want to make the transition from the former to the latter, the best and most basic thing you can do is just to read the scriptures. Make a goal then to do just that. Commit to reading the Bible every single day. Set a reminder on your phone. Read along with an accountability partner so you can help each other keep on track. If you use a Bible app like the YouVersion Bible app that I use, then you can set your reading plans to pop up and remind you each day. Whatever it is you have to do to make it happen, reading the scriptures is the single best way you can come to know Jesus better. Indeed, how are you going to build your life on his words if you don't read them so that you know what they are? The second thing you can do to build your life on the words of Jesus is to study them. While reading them is really important, the fact is some of them are hard. It's the whole idea of the series. We've looked at four hard spots in particular in the last 5 weeks. But, you know, here's the truth we just can't escape as much as we'd like to do so. Reading the Bible, especially every day, isn't always easy. For starters, because of the potential power such a practice has in our lives, if we endeavor to incorporate it more fully and intentionally, our enemy, the devil, is going to do everything he can to throw us off track. More than that, though, the scriptures were written to a set of cultures, the most recent of which is about 2,000 years removed from ours. Things that they understood as a matter of course, we often don't. Just because you read the words of Jesus doesn't mean you'll immediately understand them. So get some help and learn. Use a good study Bible. Use a commentary. I have several in every book in the Bible. Talk over what you've read with another person, with your Sunday school class, for instance. Ask me for help. Do something. Just like if a friend said something confusing, you'd stick with it until you understood it. God's word isn't always clear at first read. Stick with it. Study it until you get it. This is how we come to know Jesus better. But don't stop with just studying them, though. When we study the words of Jesus, we have to have our Bibles or phones or some other device with us to be able to do it. When we memorize them, however, we're unrestrained by anything physical. We have Jesus' words with us, in us, everywhere we go. Now, when it comes to memorizing Scripture, everybody says the same thing. Oh, I can't memorize Scripture. Nonsense. Look, you memorize all kinds of things. I mean, fill in the blanks here. My address is... You could tell me that, right? How about this? Take me out to the ball game. I pledge allegiance to the flag. Sing us a song, you're the piano man. Or maybe this one. So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Or maybe this one. My social security number is... Okay, don't answer that one out loud. So should we keep going? The point is, you have all of those things memorized. And I bet if we did keep going, we could find a whole lot more things you have memorized too. You can memorize things. You memorize things you deem sufficiently important or which you encounter on a recurring frequency. In other words, if you read the scriptures, the words of Jesus, on a regular basis, you will begin to memorize them simply by their recurring frequency in your life. Serving Jesus is not the same as knowing Jesus. And one of the best ways to know Jesus, to bring him into our hearts, is to memorize his words. One more here. Reading, studying, even memorizing Jesus' words are excellent goals in and of themselves. But if we stop there, we really haven't done anything for ourselves. Without this last thing, we're still building our lives on the sand. We're still running the risk of falling on the wrong side of Jesus' terrifying declaration, I never knew you. There's one more truly essential thing we have to do. We have to put him into practice. Serving Jesus is not the same as knowing Jesus. And once you know Jesus, you put his words into practice because of who he is. His words lead to abundant life. His words bring hope and healing. They're the words that spoke creation into existence. They called a man alive from his tomb after rotting in it for 4 days. They stilled a storm and multiplied a small lunch many thousands of times over. They changed water into wine and brought sight to the blind. Jesus' words are powerful and true. If you really knew Jesus, why wouldn't you put his words into action? When Jesus said to love our enemies then, find somebody you don't like, and find a way to show Jesus' love to her. When Jesus said to love God with all your heart, take an inventory of the things you love more than him, and one by one put them back in their proper place. When Jesus said to forgive others, find someone who's hurt you, even if years ago, and intentionally release them from the debt they owe you. Put his words into action. Build your whole life on them. Prove your knowledge of him. And out of all that, serve him with all your heart. Serving Jesus isn't the same as knowing Jesus. But once you know him, serving flows naturally. It flows naturally because of who he is. Serve him in small ways and big ways. Serve him publicly and privately. Serve him in every way you can. Cry out his name for salvation. Shout, Lord, Lord, in joyful repose. Because you'll be his. And life will be yours. And when you stand before him at the throne of judgment after knowing him for as many years as he gives you leave to do so in this place, he'll know you too. And it'll be a happy reunion. Know him well then, and serve him with gladness.